it's been 100 years since the formation of the Soviet Union, and although the country has not been around for three decades already, the impact it's had on world geopolitics has been so profound that it's still a subject that's widely spoken about today. And today we're also going to get the opportunity to discuss that with the renowned Russian philosopher Alexander Dugin. Thank you very much for joining us and giving us time for this interview, Mr. Dugin. First question I want to ask has to do with the Soviet Union specifically. Do you think that it would have been possible to preserve it? And if it was preserved, how do you think the Soviet Union would look as a multinational country in 2022?
First of all, we need to understand that, geopolitically speaking, Soviet Union was the continuation of the Russian Empire. Ideologically, it was quite different. It was based on the totally opposite values and ideas. But as geopolitical entity, as heartland, as Eurasian landmass, and the vision of the classics of geopolitics, like Mackinder or Brzezinski, Soviet Union was direct continuation and realization of the land power, opposite to sea power. So in that sense, that was a kind of realization of the main geopolitical contradiction that is the core of the human history, according always to Mackinder. So if we consider the fall of the Soviet Union in this geopolitical aspect, that the meaning of that was a kind of defeat of the land power in front of the sea power. That was a great, great catastrophe of this heartland and the big, big achievement of the sea power, or global Western liberal civilization. In that sense, we could imagine a continuation of Soviet Union during last three decades, like some Eurasianist thinkers presumed it can or would be or could be. So the idea, the end of the ideology of communism, it was almost inevitable, unavoidable. We need to get rid of this exhausted Soviet dogmatism, but that could not mean directly the fall of the Soviet Union or this disappearance of unity of this geopolitical entity. And if Soviet Union would survive this catastrophe, it will be a kind of Eurasian Union, a kind of Eurasian empire, or return to the classical Russian empire with strategical centralism and multiplicity of the ethnic groups living inside. So I think that was quite possible. So to abandon Soviet ideology and preserve and save geopolitical unity of this heartland, of this land power, that was possible. And precisely now we are dealing with the will of the Moscow to reconquer this geopolitical space. So there is a moment of the return to the geopolitics, because land power once more wants now to reaffirm its independence, sovereignty, in front of the collective West that is today under almost full control of the Atlanticist, the thalassocratic elite of sea power. So we are reconstructing this geopolitical space without, obviously, without Soviet ideology, but trying to restore the greatness of the empire or recreate Eurasian Union.
In terms of that, I mean, the fall of the Soviet Union, of course, is something that's studied very heavily in other socialist countries that are still existing today, especially China. They study the fall of the Soviet Union a lot to understand what they could do differently as specifically a communist country. So they've reformed into a more market model while still retaining this sort of socialist ideology. Do you think that could have been possible if the Soviet Union were to be preserved?
Exactly, I think it would be possible. And China, precisely, has got the main lesson of the fall of the Soviet Union, that you should and you are obliged to preserve and save the country, the unity, the strategical control over it, including all ethnic groups, because China is multi-ethnical society as well as Soviet Union was and Russia is, without transforming the country, without losing the power of the centralist government. So you could make reform, you could change some aspect of economy, but you never should lose the sovereignty and the control over geopolitical space. And the other thing that China has taken from this catastrophe of the Soviet Union, that in order to make correct transformation of the ideology, you shouldn't discard the ancient tradition. So now China is a communist political power, almost totalitarian, with Confucianism in the center and with successful control over a growing liberal market. So that is not liberalism as in the West. That is the liberalism under control of the centralized ideologically socialist power. It is quite different. So the Chinese didn't give to the society liberal democracy with liberal market. They have preserved vertical government of the country with unique and united power, political power, and they have submitted liberal economy to it. And I think that is example how in the positive situation the new Russian Soviet Union could be a centralized power with full geopolitical control over all parts and ethnic zones, with mixed economy, with combination of the socialism, with traditionalism, with Christianity, with Russian tradition values, and that could function, that could work as it works in China. And that is why our population now deplores deeply what has happened 30 years ago, because we have lost the chance to transform our society ideologically, but to prevent this collapse and to save the unity that is much more than Soviet Union, because that is unity of the heartland of Eurasia. That is possible, and China shows that it is possible. And it was possible for Chinese, and it was as well possible for Russians. So we get missed the historical chance to adapt our society to new and to answer new challenges without accomplishing suicide, and the collapse of the Soviet Union was suicide, and not just a demand for independence of the former republics. That was suicide made in the center. So we are fully responsible. We Russians, we are fully responsible for that. It's not only just nationalists from the periphery. That was the crime made by the government of Moscow, by the center.
Well, you used the term near totalitarianism, connected to Confucianism, to describe what modern China has basically reformed into. And it's interesting to me because, as an American, totalitarianism, the term, as I understand it, is basically has long been just a word that people in the West have used to attack Russia or China. And when I moved here, I realized that things are a lot more nuanced in countries that are just labeled totalitarianism, like the state just controls everything. I just wanted to understand, like, what exactly did you mean by that in terms of China? And also, in the Soviet Union, would you say that that was a totalitarian society as well?
We could regard this term in different ways. For example, according to some authors, Hannah Arendt, for example, totalitarian is the is nature of the political modernity. Mm-hmm. All political system of European modernity are totalitarian. Mm-hmm. Fascism is openly totalitarian. Communism is as well totalitarian, but liberalism, pretending to be alternative to totalitarianism, is as well totalitarian in its nature, because it imposes totalitarian, it is imposition of the unique political system of values over a society. It could be nationalist values, it could be communist, socialist values, or liberal values. Now, in the West, we are dealing with pure totalitarian liberalism. So that is only hypocrisy to pretend that anybody else except liberals are totalitarian regimes, and totalitarian only liberals are not totalitarian. When we had communist society existing, real communist society, and fascist society, real fascist society, in that situation, you could compare them with liberal democracy, and this comparison would lead you to the conclusion that obviously there is totalitarian society and not totalitarian society. But when there is no more communism, neither communism nor fascism, and the unique paradigm is liberalism, we need that liberalism itself is totalitarian. For that reason, I use that as a matter of fact. I don't blame that. I don't make apology of it. But the only way I just want to stress, to emphasize that Chinese society is not liberal or liberal totalitarian. It is just holistic. We could use more appropriate word, holistic. So there is holistic system. It is the system when the common is put over the individual or the parts. The whole thing is put over the parts of it. That is holistic attitude. You could blame that as totalitarian, but we can blame as totalitarian as well this liberal democracy that pretends to have the absolute truth and to impose this so-called truth on anybody else in the world without regarding the particularity of different civilizations. So there is inherent racism in the Western liberalism because it identifies the Western historical, political, cultural experience with universal one. Mm-hmm. So if you say that the West, it is the same as humanity, and humanity is under West, undeveloped, as not yet Western enough, It is purely racist approach. It could be openly racist as in a form of national socialism based on biology, but it is as well cultural racism that we are dealing with in the modern days liberal globalism. So in that sense, I wouldn't like to speak more about how I appreciate this communist system in China, but I would like to stress that it's holistic rather than individualistic, mm-hmm. and I think that that is much more correspondent to the tradition of Chinese society. And if Chinese think this system or this regime fits them well, and they like that, that up to them to decide, not to for the activists of open society or proponents of liberalism. So let the people decide for themselves, and that is the main principle of real democracy, if you want, on the international level.
We've been talking a lot about communism, and I wanted to ask if you see a sort of unifying ideology in modern Russian society like the one that was in the Soviet Union, because obviously for most, I would say, of the Soviet period, people were united by this one idea, communism. They wanted to build communism, and that was something they had to strive towards. Do you think that the modern Russian people have something like that? And if not, what could fill that gap?
Obviously, we have not yet such kind of ideology that could fill the gap that has appeared after the fall of the communist ideology, but we need to find something, and I'm working on that. First of all, I have arrived to the conclusion that the only ideology that could accept whole Russian society could not be neither liberal nor communist, leftist, nor right or nationalist. So or we need combination of left and right ideology, mostly against liberalism that is totally rejected by our society. Mm-hmm. So we could unite at least majority of our society on the mixture between right illiberalism and left illiberalism, social justice and traditional values, for example. Or we need to go further and to imagine a fourth political theory outside of liberalism, communism, and fascism. And I think that we are approaching to the moment in this confrontation with the collective West, with the liberal globalism, with the Western civilization, we are coming to the conclusion that we need to overcome the Western modernity itself, not only liberalism, but as well the other conceptual construction, political constructions of modern West, communism and nationalism as well. Nationalism we are fighting against in Ukraine, so it is impossible, and multi-ethnic, multi-traditional, multinational structure of Russian society totally excludes the possibility to appeal to Russian nationalism. It is out of question. But socialism is being a part of our history, recent history, could not fill that gap. We could not return to the Soviet time, but in spite of some sympathy, growing sympathy to Soviet time, but return is impossible because we could not accept this dogmatism. Marxism is out of the questions. So we need to get further and to mix demand of social justice, Soviet future, with traditional values, reaffirmed by recently statement of our president that has made a decree in order to defend and reaffirm on the political level traditional values in Russian society. So I think that's that should be outside of political Western modernity. We need to explore more Russian tradition of Slavophiles, of Dostoevsky, or Christian Orthodoxy, and we need to rediscover non-Western or pre-modern, if you want, post-modern types of political thought. So we need to join pre-modernity with post-modernity, and we need to relativize, to make relative the Western experience. So the West is only part of the humanity, and in spite of it pretending to be the whole of the humanity, it is not so. So we need to rediscover our own political thought of when Russia wasn't under dominating influence of the West. So that is really the challenge for us, to rediscover or recreate this ideology that should be organic, that should have its historical dimension, but at the same time, it should be new, fresh. It should be creative in some way. And all that in direct refutation of the Western liberal hegemony against open society, against individualism, against liberal democracy that West tries to impose on everybody, but as well to throw out communism as dogmatism and fascism as because all three political theories, main political theories, all three of them were originated in the modern West. And in that sense, I agree with Hannah Arendt. Western modernity is totalitarian. And we need to get out of this Western type of totalitarianism to arrive to the positive, fresh, and organic Russian holism, Russian Orthodox, or better, Eurasian holism that could include the other traditional society in the main symphony of the ethnic groups, of the peoples and religions. So that will be completely new form of ideology that is much closer maybe to Eurasianism or to some. There's some mixture between traditionalism and social justice.
And how would you say economics plays into this? Because at least with the Soviet experience, command economics made its significant contributions to the development of Russia, while at the same time we saw, of course, stagnation towards the end. But in terms of, market economics, we saw what kind of situation Russia was in back in 2014, when it was much more connected to the Western financial system and the West decided to put sanctions on it, as opposed to now, when these unprecedented Western sanctions, once Russia was far less dependent on the dollar, they had far less of an effect on Russia. So where do you see economics playing into this? Do you see a Russian future more oriented towards markets or towards command economics?
So first of all, I think that the excessive role of economy, obsession by economy, is the one of the marks or one of the symbols of the degradation of civilization. So if you reduce all values to economy, if you evaluate everybody and everything with economical mark, so you are done. You are already done. You have lost everything, because now in our last decree of our president, the traditional value, the main traditional value, is accepted the predominance of the spirit over the matter, and that is quite Russian. So that is the main key. So economy, when you are obsessed with economy, you is obliged to follow more and more this confrontation, this competition with the other. And less you is concerned by economic frenzy, by the will to economic growth, and continuum economic growth, the more you are engaged in the fatal and in the fatal logic of matter. So you become the slave of matter and material transformation. You are not anymore master of the economy. You become slave of economy. So as Louis Dumont, French sociologist, has said, in the 20th century, we had three political regimes: communism, liberalism, and fascism. Communism and liberalism were obsessed by economy, and they have shown more or less impressive results. Liberalism better, communism slightly worse, but fascism, for example, was absolutely unconcerned by economy. There was no specially fascist or specially national socialist system of economy, and they have shown during Hitler era the results compatible and maybe much better than those regimes obsessed with economy. So that doesn't mean that fascism was good. Absolutely, Louis Dumont was French Democrat sociologist. He just wanted to emphasize that more you are engaged in economy as theory, as the main criterion of development, that less you are prepared to deal with real challenges. So I think that in Russian ideology, in Russian life, we need to get rid of this obsession of economy. So, and that is the way to make economy really sane. So we need to answer the concrete challenges. We need to make a rational balance between state and private property and private enterprises. So we need to create logical and natural approach to solve economic problem without any dogmatism, without this competition between socialism and capitalism. So we need to get rid of the dogmatism in economy, and we need to put economy under the spiritual development. So we need to say first of all culture rather than civilization in Spenglerian terms. So our problem is not to be engaged in this or that economical dogma. We need to create functioning society, first of all, just based on justice, on tradition, on the happiness of the people, and all these elements are more moral, are more spiritual values than economy. And that doesn't mean we should ignore economy. No, we should ignore economic dogmatism. If market economy works in some zone of society, let it be. If state involvement is functional, is positive, let it be as well. If there is a common communitarian approach in some group of population, let be communes, some form of communitarian societies. So we should get rid of any kind of orthodoxy in economy. So we need more than that. We need accept heterodox economical solution. And if we regard with such eyes, with such eye, what was the best economical performance in the history of last century, we see that precisely the mixture. So, for example, American strategy of mercantilism and protectionism with free markets, and so in other in Europe, that is social politics, almost socialism with some freedom of enterprises. So the balance between state and private capital is always changing. It is always relation. It is not the dogma. So we need to find the relation that fits, that would fit better to Russian experience, to Russian society, and that would help us better to solve the concrete ongoing problem. So I'm a proponent of the economical heterodoxy. So outside destruction of dogmas. So neither Marxism nor liberalism there are some interesting things that are between. And Schmoller, Schumpeter, Veblen, the best economists of Keynes, saying Keynes, the best economists of the Western liberal thought, they were not convinced liberals. They were in between. They were they proposed, they developed some heterodoxal solutions, or Sylvia Gesell, or Ezra Pound and his poem. That was the glory. That was the glory for unorthodox economical solutions. So we need to search outside of the mainstream path in economy.
Well, I want to move now a little bit to international relations, because, of course, the Cold War was marked by what many historians agree was a sort of bipolar world order between the West, the capitalist West, and the socialist East. To what extent do you think that legacy of a bipolar world order is still relevant today? Because a lot of people say that we're in a new Cold War right now. And what do you have to say about, like, multipolarity in the world? Would you say that that they have some sort of parallels at the same time, because the world does seem to be developing somehow into a more Eurasian camp and the Western camp that has existed for a while now?
So on one side, there is still continuation of bipolarity, because there is the one pole untouched. So among two poles that existed before the end of the Soviet Union, one has disappeared, and the other is here, is present. So that is the kind of residue of a bipolar system. And the West behaves itself as if it is still in this cold bipolar war, and consider the Russia as the heir of the Soviet Union with whom you need to fight. So that is a kind of inertia, that is continuation of the bipolar world vision. Multipolarity is emerging now, but it's something different. It is not one ideology against the other, one pole against the other. There is totally different vision of coexistence of the autonomous civilizations, as Huntington has put it, coexisting with with each other. So that doesn't mean necessary war or conflict, but that doesn't mean necessary neither peace. So it depends. In national state system, Westphalian system, there were possible wars and peace. In the bipolar world, there were possible wars and period of peace, and the same for multipolarity. Multipolarity doesn't exclude the war or conflicts, but doesn't imply as well. So multipolarity, it is precisely the end of the bipolarity. And I made an idea that the West doesn't want to accept that in multipolarity, the West will not be one of the two, but one of few poles, and not one, neither one nor one of two, but one of few. And that will reduce the importance and will limit universalist pretensions of the West. and will reduce the Western claim of hegemonity, of universality, of globalism to some concrete borders. So that is reprovincialization of the West. That is precisely multipolarity. And Russia now fighting against West, collective West, is fighting for multipolar world order, because Russia could not and will not be able to be the second pole. We could not restore bipolarity. We have neither ideological nor technical nor material capacity to counterbalance the West behaving only as ourselves. We need the other poles. So we defend now, Russia defends now, in its war against the unipolar system, not only our own status, position as independent pole, but as well the other poles, China, India, Islamic world, Latin America, Africa. So that is the first multipolar war that is going on now in Ukraine, because the West wanted at any price to preserve and save its hegemony, unipolar system that is continuation of bipolarity, and that is why it is such Russophobia, such hatred for Russia. It is continuation of bipolar understanding of the architecture of the international relations. But Russia fights not for restoration of bipolarity, it is impossible, but helps to emerge, helps emergence of multipolarity. And multipolarity demands the totally new understanding of the ideology, because in the world of bipolarity, both ideologies were the versions of the Western modern political thought, as Enlightenment, rooted in Enlightenment. So, and that was considered to be universal for all other humanity. Now we need to accept that the Western modernity is just a historical experience, very limited. It had the beginning, and it can have an end. At least it is something relative. It is not absolute, it is not universal. And that is main problem for the West, to accept that West could be a province of the humanity, not the center, not the capital. So it is just a part. It is not the whole of humanity. And multipolarity is about that. So fighting for multipolarity, Russia fights for right to different civilizations to affirm themselves with its inherent system of values that could coincide or not coincide with Western values. So nothing universal exists in multipolarity. There is a kind of relative, partly universalisms, Chinese universalism, Islamic universalism, Russian Eurasian universalism, African and Latin American. So there is not only one universalism, Western, modern, but there could exist and coexist civilizations defending their right to create their own political, cultural, artist system. So that is the meaning of the multiplicity, plurality of the civilization. So multipolarity is much more new than unipolarity and bipolarity. So bipolarity and unipolarity belonged together to this Western racist way to consider the Western modernity as something universal. And multipolarity fights against this claim, not against the West as such, but against the claim of the West to be the model, to be the unique example of the progress of the history, of an understanding of time, of man, of technology. So any civilization has its own right to to understand, to interpret what man is, what time is, what God is, what death is, what good and evil are. So that is up to civilization, and there is no one unique, universal model to impose on all the civilizations. That is what is this fight in Ukraine is.
And just one more question for you here. Which leader do you think of the Soviet period best represented that the entire Soviet era as a whole, and why?
Stalin, absolutely. It's clear. So Stalin, neither Lenin nor Brezhnev, Gorbachev is outside of the question. So Stalin, we could say that there is growing popularity of Stalin. Among the people who never saw Stalin, never lived in time of Stalin. So that is the myth that is growing. And Stalin is accepted not only by the people with sympathy for left ideas or engaged in the nostalgia, Soviet nostalgia, but as well many traditionalists, many Orthodox Christians consider Stalin to be great leader, because it is not only about Marxism and socialism, but that was as well about the greatness of empire, reconstruction of the Soviet empire, fighting against a liberal West. So that is something eternal in Stalin, and that is something clearly Soviet. So I think that all the left today is divided on Trotskyist, internationalist, anti-Stalin, and liberal, and anti-Russian, and so on, and pro-Stalinist. That is much more close to Russian traditionalist, to Putinism, and to Christian Orthodoxy, and these Stalinists and the left, in the global left, has no historical, only historical sympathy for Russia, but understand how important is the fight against the great capital, against capitalism. And the capitalism, fight against capitalism is much more important than a fight in favor of gay marriages and mass immigration and so on. So there is left today is has two poles: Stalinist, Eurasian left, and globalist, Trotskyist, pro-capitalist, pro-liberal left. It's interesting, the symbol of the Soviet period in its worst aspect and in its best aspect as well is, without any doubt, the figure of Joseph Stalin.